Your app is most likely just one part of the overall business model. There are a lot of other things that you need to consider to maximize your revenue and build a real company. Having an app is basically 30% of your business. You need to think about marketing, support, operations, talent, who's going to work on your app, product development, how are you going to make your product better? Hey everyone, welcome back to How to Build an App. We created this podcast to help you refine your idea, build an app that your customers love, get it out into the world, and scale it up.
We pay for the production of this podcast from our full-service app development agency, Strides Development. And we have a few things that you need to know about. First, we have a ton of free resources available for you at howtobuildanapppodcast.com.
Head over there right now, put in your name and email, and we'll send you 7 days of emails with our very best steps for getting started on your app idea. You'll also get our Before You Build ebook and links to our most popular episodes.
Second, if you know you're ready to get started on your app right now and you need some advice, we're offering a free strategy call. We'll help you think through your concept, your launch strategy, your MVP, or whatever you're stuck on.
You can get your free call at howtobuildanapppodcast.com. Welcome back to How to Build an App. I'm your host, Austin Betzer, and I'm here with Boji Price.
So today we have kind of a different episode as we wrap up season two. We're going to be sharing a session we recently did for the Denver Startup Week.
The session was called Stop Writing Code, the one thing you need to do before developing your app to save hundreds of thousands. And it was a lot of fun to share some of the things we've discovered over the past couple of years to help you as a future app founder save a lot of time and money in the process.
This episode is broken up into two parts. The first half will be the presentation Austin gave walking through the five building blocks you need to consider if you want to build a successful app.
Then we'll cut to the Q&A that Boji did right after where he took questions from the live audience. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Also, this episode officially wraps up season two of How to Build an App. But don't worry, everyone. We'll be right back next week with a great lineup and guests for season three. All right, let's jump in.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Denver Startup Week. I'm Connor Swanson, the developer track co-chair along with Aaron Clark and member of the Denver Startup Week organizing committee. Thank you for joining us for the 10th anniversary of Denver Startup Week. At Denver Startup Week, we strive to make all of our sessions a space where attendees can connect, learn, and grow, regardless of age, gender identity, gender expression, race, ability, or sexual orientation. A special thank you to all of our sponsors for their support in helping us to keep DSW free and accessible for all. Thank you for joining us and have a great week.
Hey, I'm excited to be speaking at Denver Startup Week. My name's Austin Betzer, and I'm super excited to tell you to stop coding right now. If you're an app founder and you want to start an app, I'm a developer who's going to tell you the one thing you need to do before you write a single line of code. This one thing is going to save you a ton of time and a ton of money. Before I tell you about that one thing and the building blocks I have ready to share, I want to tell you a little bit about how I ended up here. I was really excited when I saw them announce this event, and I knew this was something I really wanted to be involved in. We had it on our radar to submit an insane video with just an over-the-top application. We really wanted to stand out and get picked, but ultimately we ended up running out of time. We got busier and busier as the deadline got closer. And then at the very last minute, we had a conversation about how to make a video that would really stand out and make sure we got selected. Long story short, we thought about who would be watching this video and what would be motivating them. And the second, we simplified our message and removed everything that wasn't necessary. And we really narrowed in on one pain point and made a bold promise that we would deliver if we got selected. And it worked out. Our video was able to make it through the many applicants that were selected. And I'm sharing this story because it's the perfect example on what to do if you want to launch an app or you're thinking about launching an app. If you're an app founder or a future app founder and you want to know how to launch an app with limited resources, time, and money, that's exactly what we're going to cover today. I'm not only going to tell you how to launch your app, I'm going to give you a framework that you can use to build an app that people actually care about. A quick background about me and my company, Strides Development. We are a full-service app development agency. We've been around just over a year, and in the last year, we've launched a handful of apps and grown our team to close to 20 people. We've done over $2 million in revenue and built some really cool projects. We've been able to grow so fast because of one thing, and that is we know how to build apps that people care about. At the end of the day, getting your app live in the App Store is important, but not nearly as important as seeing your app get downloaded, used, and enjoy. So what's the difference between just building an app and building an app that people care about? And isn't this just like common sense? Well, the statistics show that it's not common sense at all. It's estimated that 80% of apps completely fail within the first year of their launch. It's also estimated that 95 to 99% of apps launched don't hit their projected success benchmarks. Basically, 80% or more of all apps that get launched aren't important enough to anyone to ever gain a meaningful user base, and founders are wasting a ton of money and time building ideas that just don't work. I personally worked on a project like this, and it was one of the most frustrating and heartbreaking things I've ever worked on. This app was a social networking app, and I was brought in as one of the iOS devs to help get it across the finish line. When we fast forward a couple months, the project completely crashed and burned, and the founder sank his entire life savings into the project, which was over $500,000, and there was nothing to show for it. This was an app, but it had no users, no user feedback, and no data of any kind. It doesn't take a super smart person to figure out that social networking app with no users isn't really working. Is this story unique? Not really. Since working on this project, I started Stride's development, and I hear a version of this story almost every week. Founders who spend too much money going from idea to idea and seeing their app idea burn out. So how do we avoid this? How do we make something that stands out? How do we make something that users actually care about? I'm going to share what I learned about this process, and I broke it down into 5 building blocks. These building blocks will help you zoom out and give you a great idea on how to get started. With each building block, I'll share a pitfall to avoid as a founder, and you'll leave with some takeaways. These 5 building blocks are your idea, your vision, the experience, your product, and your company. Once we get through these 5 building blocks, I know I made a promise at the start of this to share one thing you need to do. So once you have the background and the context, I'm going to give you a very actionable step and get you started into building your app. You guys ready to jump in? So building block number 1, you need to build a great idea. And a lot of founders completely mess up this step. Most founders build something they think is amazing. They are gung-ho about launching something that they personally need, or they're just convinced they would crush it. And here's the thing, it's super easy to spot. We typically, in our first conversation, ask them how many users they've talked to. We've asked them how much feedback they've gotten on their idea. Here's a quick tip, by the way. If you really want to stand out as a founder, don't talk about how much you personally love the idea, but talk about the people you've talked to and show the data that you've gotten from talking with them. We're going to share a clip from Eric Espinoza from Venture Validator. He talks about this exact thing.
So my business is called Venture Validator, but my wife's always been on me that I should really change it to the real name, which is Dream Crusher Inc. if you look at the 3 risks that any business faces, there's market desirability, then there's the financial viability, and there's the technical feasibility. And market desirability is the first one you should always test because 42% fail because of no market need. But after that passes, after you say, okay, awesome, I've got a good Venture Validator score, then you need to look at what you guys look at, the technical feasibility. Can this even be done? Yeah. And then proving out that financial viability. So you can still have a really cool product idea that has a terrible business model that just completely flops.
If I'm an investor and I'm going to put my own money into a company, I want to know that those decisions are driven by data rather than emotion, right? How many businesses can fail because of emotion rather than data?
And we've had, you know, people who've taken our reports and they've been able to get $100,000, $200,000, even more than that, just based off of, you know, here's more market validation that we've done it right.
So let's talk about 3 ways to dial in your idea. First, understand your customer. Instead of relying on your experience of the problem, try to put yourself in the head of your ideal users. Ask yourself, how do you think life looks right now? And then write them down, their struggles, their pains, their frustrations, and how their life sucks. So for example, let's say you're building a meditation app. Write down all the issues with the current apps and offerings. Maybe some of those issues that come up is it's too hard to find time to meditate every day. Maybe it's too confusing of a process. Maybe they're just never able to find a quiet place. Whatever it is, write them down, and now you can start to brainstorm and think of a couple different solutions. Some of these solutions might be an app that integrates with your calendar and automatically blocks off 15 minutes on your schedule. Maybe the app has a starter course and you teach them how to slowly begin adding meditation to their life on a daily basis. This is a super simple process and it really helps you to get inside your user's head. Number 2 is narrow your features way down. Now that you're actually in the head of your target user, start thinking about 1 or 2 features that really get them excited about your app. A great example of this is Day One Journal. This is a journaling app based out of Utah, and they went all in on the journaling experience. They didn't say, well, we also need features for people to keep track of their notes from their meetings. They went all in on just journaling, and it really made them stand out. Number 3, make an arrow, not a sledgehammer. What does this mean? A sledgehammer is blunt, and it takes a lot of force to use effectively. An arrow is sharp and cuts right through the noise. If you have a ton of features, you're a blunt object. If you have one or two killer things that your app delivers, then your messaging will be sharp. Think of your features like a weapon that will cut through the noise. You don't want to build a sledgehammer, you want to build an arrow. Now that you've tightened up your idea and you're starting to get better feedback and refine your feature set, what's next? Building block number two is your vision. You need to create and refine your vision of your app and build a product and share that vision with your team, potential users, and very early customers. So what's the pitfall to avoid here? Don't be selfish with your vision and your idea. How do we know right away if somebody is going to get stuck in this pitfall? The dreaded NDA. You know this founder, hey, I have this idea, a revolutionary new app. Will you sign an NDA so we can talk more about it? And then they go on to explain how their app is a Tinder mixed with Yelp. If you are scared to have a general chat with potential customers, partners, or agencies about your idea until you have an NDA in place, you probably have the wrong mindset when it comes to building an app. Most people won't sign an NDA. With an NDA, you're not really helping yourself as much as you think you are. And here's the thing, you're going to win not because you kept your idea a secret, but because you were damn good at executing. One major part of executing on this vision is including your team, your fans, and your potential users in the design and development process. We always say that the app design and the development needs to be multiplayer. If you're the only one in your company that knows the full vision of your product, brand, and company, and you're being super secretive about the vision, you're going to have a really hard time getting feedback and making the right changes to your idea to become a successful company. Let's watch a clip from Rumble Studio where he talks about how to properly take feedback and refine your vision.
There is two kinds of feedback, I would say. Yeah, there is, of course, the feedback like, this button is not working. So we...
It's good feedback.
Let's create a bug. So this is like a priority. If the features we have don't even work, let's work on that first. But about the big feature, even before listening to our users, we have a vision with Carl, which is made of main features. We know what we want. We have an idea of what we want, and this is what we want to iterate on. So all those feedback that Carl gets from our users, we have a big database of them. We put all of them there. But still, there is a lot of issues we need to implement even before using those feedback. So, like payment, for example. If you want to have people paying us automatically with Stripe, let's implement that even before adding a specific brand feature coming from a specific user.
It is tricky when the users say, well, can you just add this? Or can you just change that? Because, I mean, one thing I get a lot is, so you're going to add video? And it's like, well, not yet. I mean, it's hard enough doing an audio conversation without adding all the complexity of video.
People are like, Will you
add live? I mean, it's just so many things, right? And so you could easily get dragged in different directions. But like Joyce is saying, if you've got that clear vision, then if the users are saying, well, like, we need to accomplish this task, and we can think, and we say, okay, the product that we're building according to our vision could help you with this, then we can tweak it in that direction for you. But if it's completely off the vision, it's completely off the roadmap, I think you have to be very selective about responding to that.
Kind of stick to your guns, right? We have a plan and we're going to execute this plan. And if what they present to us deviates from the plan, we're not going to do it. But if it can help improve the plan, then that's something we put on our priority.
So let's talk takeaways. How do you do a better job of refining and sharing your vision? Number one, get out of your friends and family bubble. This leads back to building block number one. Don't be a founder running around talking about how good your app idea is when you haven't chatted with a person who will actually pay for your product or service. So often, founders use their close friends and family as a sounding board for the idea, and often they'll get back positive praise about what a great idea it actually is. The idea here is to make sure you get out of your friends and family bubble. Don't only share your ideas with people who might not want to tell you what they really think. Make sure you're talking to people who might hate your idea or tell you why you're wrong. Get their feedback, hear what they have to say, ask them if they know of any apps that are similar. Ask to see what apps they use. Ask them how many apps they pay for. Most important, get feedback. Takeaway number two, build a product roadmap. Now that you have feedback rolling in, how do you handle it? What if you have feedback that conflicts with each other? How do you prioritize that feedback you receive? The answer is a product roadmap. Here's the thing. If you build your app the right way, it's going to be a giant investment. You're going to launch version one and then start optimizing and tweaking. You're not buying an app you'll never touch again. You are investing in something that you will need to update and maintain. Your roadmap allows you to get rid of a lot of the anxiety and allows you to put an order to the changes and releases you plan on making, and allows you to build a realistic plan. Think of it like this. When you build your product roadmap, you'll have things like, we need to launch with this, then we'll build this next. And after we build this feature so we can have XYZ partnerships happen, then we can focus on this and that. Your roadmap doesn't have to be overly complicated. Just think about it, the sequence of what to work on next. Takeaway number three, focus on one major thing at a time. As soon as you get moving on building your app, things are going to start moving really quickly. It's a lot to keep track and keep moving. Long story short, it can really feel overwhelming. There are a lot of things to solve at once, multiple customers and partners who need changes and updates, and a lot that you want to do. So the best way to handle this is to focus on one thing at a time. Fix one thing, change one thing, rebuild one thing, and then move on to the next. Solve one thing at a time and get it right. Okay, we've talked about your idea and your vision. Now it's time to think about the next building block, the experience. This is a really important piece of making a successful app. And here's what you need to know about making a great experience. You will need to think and design every interaction in your app. The experience that your user goes through in your app is entirely up to you. When they search for something and there aren't any results, what does that screen say? What does the welcome email say after creating an account on your app? What does a forgot password flow look like? How does your user complete certain functions and tasks within your app? Each touch point in your app is an opportunity to make a great impression or drop the ball. So what's the pitfall to avoid here? Don't rush into development, especially if you have a limited budget. This is something we see all the time when founders are working with smaller budgets. Hey, I only have 25K. I need to make sure that every dollar goes into development and I need to see a finished product at the end of this. A lot of founders want to rush right into development and skip everything else. I'm here to tell you, do not do that. Now, as a dev shop, I realize that doesn't make any sense. I should be saying, give me all your money, right? Well, it doesn't make sense because development is ridiculously expensive. You don't want to backtrack. You don't want to change direction when you're in the development phase. Instead of rushing into development with no designs or crappy designs, spend a good amount of time and budget on refining your design and app prototype. I'm going to share a clip from Brian Clay where he talks about why this is such a better way to work.
How does that save a client money by going and spending time in the design feature rather than just, hey, let's just build this thing?
I think that's where you get apps that don't deliver on those table stakes things that I mentioned earlier. Is like, if you just go and build something, your app is going to be slow, complex, not organized, look like crap. Like, it's the aesthetic is going to be terrible. Having design up front tells your developers, okay, like in a visual manner, it tells your developers, this is what I'm building. I know exactly what size that typography needs to be. I know exactly how far this needs to be spaced apart. A backend engineer can see, okay, here's the kind of the data architecture that needs to happen in order to support these front end experiences. Moving a button up and down, maybe that's not like a huge deal, but think about something a little more dramatic of like, I want to move this feature from here over to this section of the app, or I want this section of the app to now communicate with this section of the app. And what does that journey look like? That is a lot easier to do inside of a design tool. I think we just recently had a project where I spent an hour on the design and it was 100 hours on the back end to deliver that design.
So how do you make sure the experience in your app is top notch? Let's talk takeaways. Avoid the temptation of rushing to market. There's always a reason that founders have for why their app needs to be done ASAP. We need to launch for Christmas. We need to launch for spring. This app will kill it in the summer. If I don't do this, I'll miss this amazing opportunity window. Most of these deadlines aren't very firm or real. In fact, most of these are made up because founders think they need to be in a massive rush to do anything. You don't need to do that. Don't let fake deadlines force your sense of urgency. When you rush things, they break. It costs more and you're paying for all of it. People get frustrated with Vue. People hate working this way. Just avoid the temptation to rush. Take your time and do it right. The second takeaway here is spend more time than you think on your prototype. In all the time that you're not rushing, you can focus on the design of your app. Like Brian said, things are much easier and much faster to change when you're in the design phase. Take your time and really build out the prototype. Give it time to sink in. When you design your app, your designers will be able to make a clickable prototype of it. You'll be able to have it on your phone and it will simulate what your finished app will look like. Go multiple rounds in this phase and really dial it in. Takeaway number three here is don't skip steps. Every part of the process has multiple steps. Don't skip any part of it. Follow the process. Don't rush something that should take time. Building block number four is your product. If you ever want to make money from your app or grow your user base, you need to think about the product side of your app. This is about what you're delivering to your users, what your monetization model is, and why people want to trade their money or time or attention for the right to use what you built. This is one area you really don't want to leave to your own gut feeling. Pitfall number four, don't make so many decisions based on your emotions. Use data and metrics. So many founders will come up and say, I don't like this, or I want to see this feature. And it's just like they're bouncing from one idea to the next thing. As you create your app, it's going to turn into a product. It's going to take a life of its own. It will start to build its own personality. It will start to serve your users, whether that's one user, 10, 10,000, or a million. As you start making decisions, it's important to co-create with your users. This could look like polls, surveys, questionnaires, but more specifically, it could look like data. As you watch what users are doing in your app, you can start to make decisions about how to better serve them and guide them to the right result. We had an awesome interview with Steve Young from a company called App Masters recently. Steve specializes in app store optimization, and he knows a ton about tracking data points and optimizing your app.
So I had one guy where we took a look at his app. We do these Friday. I go live on YouTube every Friday at 9 a.m. and we sort of audit apps. And the audience submits a bunch of their apps. We look at them on the fly, and I just go brrr, and just give out some advice. And what we found out with this guy was, so he's gone on to 99. So he's making $1 a day, Audrey. Okay, just $1 a day, 50 downloads, just about $1 a day. Yeah.
Okay.
I fixed the product. So I said, hey, we're going to do, and we can go into what we did, but we're going to increase your in-app purchase. All it was a remove ads. We're going to lock certain features. Still functional, little really good app. But we're gonna lock some features, and then we're gonna have three in-app purchases because people like options. So we have a remove ads in-app purchase, we have a full feature premium in-app purchase, and then we have everything. And then just changing that, $17 a day.
Went like, from
you could just see it.
$1 to $17.
Yeah.
Just by removing a few things.
Just by optimizing the product. No additional downloads, just optimizing the flow, locking certain features, providing more options within the in-app purchase features, right? And giving users that. No additional downloads, but you saw the immediate spike when that new version went live. You saw the revenue spike just like pop, day one. Now, we ran some different growth hacks I'm happy to share with you. And then he's gone on to now $100 a day. And the best, the reason why I love this story is this was a guy who was like, it was a geometry solver app. This is an app that I was just sort of like a throwaway. Taught myself how to code. And I was just kind of like, it's a nice little hobby. I still have a full-time job. I'm just going to throw away. And now he's coming back and Steve, like, got real revenues now. How do I then leave my full-time job, right? Like, and that's what, forget about all the big names, which I love, right? People are like, ooh, that's cool. But that's the type of story that pumps me up.
So let's talk takeaways. One, test your assumptions way before you launch your app. One of the first assumptions you can test is whether you can get people who don't know you to click on your ad and join your emailing list. Here's what you need to do. Throw up a landing page, go on Facebook, run an ad, collect their email, throw a couple $100 at it, and come up with ways to optimize it and decrease the cost of the conversion. Do people on Facebook get what you're trying to say? Ask that question. How much does it cost to get one person who's interested in what you're trying to build? Takeaway number two is get your analytics right. Founders do this way too late and they're making the wrong decisions. When you don't have the right analytics and tracking installed in your app, you've missed valuable information on the flow of your users. You should know how many people are visiting your App Store page. You should know your conversion rate from the App Store preview to the download. You should know how many people are using specific features after they download it. And you should know how long people are using your app every single day. How many people come back to your app after they create an account? Like, these are all key data points that you can have to help drive a better user experience. Now let's dive into takeaway number three. Let the data drive your decision-making process. Now that you have the data, use the data to make decisions about what you need to change in your app. Building block number five, build a great company. Our last building block is to remember, it's not just building an app. Build a great company. Pitfall number five, don't get so focused on your app that you forget the rest of the picture. Your app is most likely just one part of the overall business model. There are a lot of other things that you need to consider to maximize your revenue and build a real company. Having an app is basically 30% of your business. You need to think about marketing, support, operations, talent, who's going to work on your app, product development, how are you going to make your product better? You need to think about version two. A great example of this is from one of our clients and friends, Doug Cartwright. Doug built a really cool app, but instead of just focusing on his app, he used the success of his users to build an entire business with courses, coaches, and even a book. Check it out.
Let's talk about your business and where it's at.
Yeah.
And it was started as this app.
Yeah.
And we're beyond that.
Yeah.
I think you're too deep now.
Yeah, we're way past the app.
Yeah, so let's talk about how building this app and being fully committed has brought you to where you're at today, and what are you doing today?
Yeah, so the app, really, now that I look back at it, and I've got big plans to the app, and there's changes and updates I want to make. I've got a really cool vision of what I think it could really be, and I plan on moving forward with that. I love where it's at today, but I'm always, how can we make it better?
Yeah.
With that being said,
we're gonna have to re-scrap everything and start over.
Yeah, eventually we'll have that conversation. But what the app did is it gave me credibility, right? And it gave me confidence, and the app was successful, and we had a successful launch, and we have lots of users who use it and subscribers, and it subconsciously like validated my mission and my purpose. And it made me feel like, okay, I'm not a wanna entrepreneur. I'm an actual, a true entrepreneur now.
Entrepreneur.
And it validated me in that sense and gave me the confidence to step into these other roles of getting a coaching business and having an online course and doing the webinars and having a media company with content and a strong social media presence. And now I've got, my business was gonna be app. It's like now my main business is, working with people one-on-one and private clients.
Let's talk about a few takeaways that will help you build your company. One, change your mindset. If you think you can just release your app and then just sell it for millions, you're in the wrong game. If you want to be successful, it's going to be a lot of work for a long time. There are a lot of new things to build, new features to release, new problems to solve. So buckle in for the long haul and start loving the work. Takeaway number two, learn the other part of your business. Talk to your customers, interview them, learn the other parts of the business, learn how taxes work, learn how your marketing works. Takeaway number three, focus on things that don't scale. Paul Graham, the founder of Y Combinator, has a quote about this. The question to ask about an early stage startup is not, is this company taking over the world? But how big could this company get if founders did the right things? And the right things often seem both laborious and inconsequential at the time. Microsoft can have seemed very impressive when it was just a couple of guys in Albuquerque writing basic interpreters for the market of a few thousand hobbyists, as they were then called. But in retrospect, that was the optimal path for dominating the microcomputer software. And I know Brian Chesky and Joe Gibbia didn't feel like they were en route to the big time as they were taking professional photos of their first host's apartment. They were just trying to survive. But in retrospect, that too was the optimal path for dominating a big market. So let's recap. We talked about how important your idea is and to avoid building something just because you think it's a great idea. We talked about your vision and not to be selfish with your vision and to be willing to share it with your friends, family, and most importantly, your potential users. We talked about the experience of your app and the importance of not rushing through your design and prototype stages. We talked about your product and the importance of making decisions with data. And we talked about your company and why you can't forget to build all the pieces around your app. So where's the one place you can start right away? And what is the one thing that any app founder or future app founder can do today? Start talking to your potential users. Explain your idea and then listen to them. If there is one thing you can do that will save you lots of time and money, it's this. Head out there and get started. I hope you liked hanging out and I can't wait to hear about your app project. Feel free to find me on LinkedIn or send me an email. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Hey guys, not sure if you guys can hear me or not, but my name is Beaudry Price. You probably saw me on a few of those videos there. Wanted to take a second on behalf of Strides and thank you guys for all being here. We wanted to open up for a few Q&As. No questions had come up yet. And so I wanted to take a quick second. So if there's any more questions you guys might have, would love for you to go ahead and ask those questions through the Q&A feature. But while we're kind of waiting for a couple of questions, you guys got to see quite a bit of our podcast. We've done a lot of really cool podcasts with some really interesting people, as you saw in this video. And so I wanted to reach out and let you guys know, if you guys want to follow more of that podcast, just go to our website at strides.dev/podcast. So it's just right there. Man, I bet you we're at 30, maybe 35 episodes. I'm not sure. Our producer probably knows better than I do, but we have another, probably another 15 to 20 episodes ready to release. We were able to build some really cool partnerships. And as we've kind of talked about this, and you've probably came to this meeting hoping to learn more about like development and stuff like that.
you're going to notice that actual coding isn't always the most important step. A lot of it is making sure that the idea is good. And one of the big things we pick when we pick a client is this somebody that's going to take this to the next level? That's something that's super important to us. So we have a couple of questions. Carla, I'm going to go ahead and start with yours. So after doing all the steps, what can we do to make an app without coding? Or is coding always a must for an app? Great question, Carla. There are so many different options. So who was it? It might've been, I can't remember who we were doing a podcast with, but as a founder, there's three things that you need to have. You need to have sales and marketing figured out. Either you need to be like really good at sales and marketing, or you need to be really good at coding. Or number three, you need to have funds to be able to find someone that can do that. One of the cool things, Carla, is very early on in your app or your business idea is you can get these no code options. So there are no code tools out there. We did a podcast with the founder of Adalo. Adalo is a really cool no code tool. That's more of a design tool that actually allows you to create an app. And so going to think bubble.io, Adalo, Airtable, look at these different companies and create an idea that doesn't require coding. Because again, as Austin said in our meeting, development is very, very expensive. To be able to have a team of developers to build the front end, to build the back end, to do all of those things, you're going to cost a lot of money. But you can go out and learn a tool called Adalo. I am not a developer myself, right? I'm just kind of the biz dev side of the company. But like I've gone into Adalo and be able to create like a fun little app for things like that. And so so one of the big things is look at maybe doing Adalo, look at bubble.io, look at these couple different things, even as something as simple as Google Sheets and spreadsheets, just to be able to show people what problem you're trying to solve without investing a lot of money is a great option. Joe asks, how do you go about validating an idea? This is a really great question, Joe. One of the ways that we always recommend our clients to do is you saw that we had a little clip in there called with Eric Espinoza of Venture Validators. So Venture Validators is a company based out of Utah near us, and we've built a really good relationship, but they go out and they send out hundreds of surveys asking people what they think of this idea. I'll give an example of a client we had who brought an idea to us who honestly wasn't a great idea, but we weren't sure. And so we went out and we tested this idea. We sent out hundreds of surveys to the people who'd be using this app, this consumer-based app. And they came back and it scored pretty high, but they said, hey, so I'll give an example. Anything below an 8 is probably something you need to work on. This idea scored around a 6. Honestly, it was a little bit better than we thought, but we asked all these surveys and we sent out. And then we said at the very end of kind of the survey said, what type of things would make it better? And they gave us these really great suggestions of like things we should do. So we pivoted the idea a little bit. And when we pivoted that idea, what happened is we retested it and we sent out a ton of different surveys out and it retested to an 8.6, right? Or yeah, it was over an 8 because we were able to validate this idea and make those changes. And you know how much that costed? Significantly less than actually building a product, sending it out to the product, to the like finalizing a product, and then having them tell us what they don't like and going back and changing it. And so if you can validate before you can get into the development, validate with a high fidelity prototype. I'm a big believer of the lean startup about getting a product out early. So let the consumers build it. So that's a really great question, Joe, is either going out and talking to your customers yourself or hiring a company like Venture Validators to go out and find these people and ask them, right? So Joe, you asked another question about how you're in marketing. It says, I'm in marketing, but I don't know coding. My business partner doesn't know coding. How do I find someone to develop an app? Awesome question. This is my suggestion is when it comes to finding a technical founder, you have a couple different options. You can go out and say, okay, we want to bring a partner on who is a technical founder who can help build for you. If you don't have a lot of funding, you can give up some equity for that. And so there's a lot of different ways you can try and find that. My personal suggestion is reaching out to your own network of who they might know, right? You can go to places like Upwork and you can go find these different type of areas. But in reality, If you're looking for a technical founder, you're going to want to someone that you know and you trust. And so I always recommend finding a technical founder. If you guys don't and you have a budget, you can find a development agency similar to like us as strides.dev, where we can come on and be that technical founder for you. And we're going to consult with you and find out what the best direction is. We'll have people come to us and say, hey, I have a budget of this much. And we'll say, hey, let's release way under that budget and try and get to market. So you can find a dev shop. Again, you can find dev shops in a lot of different places. I always recommend reaching out to your own personal network or somebody that you can validate to make sure they do a good job. Or you can do either offshore teams or contractors, right? So I always recommend there are some amazing offshore teams, meaning offshoring, meaning finding companies from like the Philippines or India or in Europe who can build and code for you. Awesome option. It's a lot cheaper when it comes to building an actual product, but there are downsides to it. Communications sometimes struggles. And I always recommend if you're going to find an offshore team, make sure you have a strong technical advisor that can audit the code and give great direction, because just because of cultural differences, time zone differences, sometimes they miss the mark. And then you're in what we call technical debt. We've paid a lot of money to build something you don't want, and we have to go back and change that. And then the last one is you could find a contractor who might have a good portfolio and reaching out to them and saying, hey, this is someone I found on Upwork, or different directions that you could go to find those people and really vet and talk to a lot of people when it comes to finding someone to develop an app. So I always kind of recommend, again, we kind of talked about it in the episode we just watched with Austin. The big thing, guys, is make sure to avoid technical debt. Nothing is worse, and it breaks our heart, because I'm on daily calls every day with clients who come to us and say, hey, I've spent, you know, $40,000 on this app and it's not even released or it's not even close. Can you guys help me? And so we'll get into it. And the code may be not very great, or there's issues and there's not a lot, we don't have great answers for them, and saying, yeah, we're going to have to go. And they said, well, I waste my whole budget on this app, and they're in a tough spot. And that's the spot that I want to make sure that if you're listening to this, if you're at home and you're starting a business and it's in a tech world, try to avoid technical debt the best that you can. Going backwards on development is not cheap. So like Brian said, he's our UX designer. A client released an idea and people didn't like it or something, and they came back to him. And Brian says, I was able to change that idea in less than an hour, where it took development a full 100 hours. If you're being charged, let's just say $200 an hour, you just spent $20,000 to change one thing that the designer was able to change in less than $200. So thank you. I appreciate that question there, but it really just comes down to making sure that you have a good game plan going forward. Josh just asked another question. Josh, thanks for the talk. Thanks for being here, Josh. Are there any different ways you should go about validating a B2B to a B2C apps? So a business to business app and a business to consumer app. This is an excellent question, Josh. And it's funny because we've worked with the Eric Espinoza and Venture Validators, and we've run into some issues when it comes to business to business. Business to business is much more difficult to validate. This B2B type validation, instead of a B2C, a business to consumer type validation, it's a lot harder. So for example, we were working with a client who's building a software for really sales professionals, like software companies that are working in sales professionals. And so we would have to talk and find people who are vice president of sales, director of marketing, vice president of marketing, VPs. Those people are a lot harder to get to, Josh. And so that's going to be a bigger challenge for you. And that's going to be more of your network of going out and finding people, finding the right person of who's going to be using, what businesses are going to be using this feature or this idea. And you have to get their take. And so one of the things that we do is we've kind of transitioned our validating, where we actually validate the user going through it. And so one of the things I recommend, Josh, is if you're trying to validate a business, is building a high fidelity prototype. Again, it's like a fancy slideshow where you can actually go through and
where you can go through and walk through the app, and it really kind of gives us directions and trying to put that into the right hands. And so if you can get a network of, in this case, you know, sales professionals or marketing professionals, you can go into to Facebook groups and find those people. You can go into LinkedIn groups and find those people and put this in front of them. If you can really put these things in front of those business owners, I mean, going out and hitting the pavement, right? Just trying to find your users is what's going to determine whether you're successful or not, right? Because if you can get enough data to support your direction of the business, you're going to be a lot more successful. And so, yes, when it comes to what different ways you're going to validate a B2B to B2C, it's much different. B2C is much easier. You can go out and find certain age groups on Facebook. You can go out and send surveys in different groups. It's much easier. B2B is going to be a bit more challenged, but it definitely can be done. It's just a little bit more difficult to find those people. And so, excellent question. We want to make sure that we validate ideas. And it's kind of interesting. Again, we are a dev shop. We're the type of people that are like, people want to build an app and they'll come to us, and we're turning people away often saying, before we get into development, you're way too early. We need to validate your idea. We want to make sure. And so that's why we kind of came out with our App Accelerator program. Our App Accelerator program helps us go through the design workshops, empathy maps, development roadmaps, really set you up for success is what really kind of makes a big difference. So kind of in the last year, in the last few minutes, the one thing I do want to touch on for those that are listening and have asked questions about possibly finding someone to develop an app, be very, very cautious of anybody that can say, I can build it within an X amount. That's really kind of a red flag. You should say, if someone's like, oh, I could build this app for 20 or 30,000, be careful of those people, just because really we don't know. And people often want to come to us. And honestly, those who are listening might jump onto a phone call with us and say, hey, you know, Beaudry, we're looking for to build this. How much is it going to cost? And my answer every time is, I don't know. I have no idea. And I want you to think of it as building a house. Hey, Beaudry, I want to build a house. Great. I have a lot more questions. How many car garage do you want? Granite? How many bathrooms? How many bedrooms? How much room, right? There has to be a process to go in to find out how much building an app and development is. So be cautious on that. Make sure that you guys are reaching out to a lot of different people in a lot of different directions to make sure that you're making the right decisions. I just realized in the chat here, there is another question. So Matthew, sorry, when you have limited funds, do you have a recommendation for what platforms to develop on first, web, Android, or Apple? Perfect question, Matthew. And I'll give you what our answer would be for this. Develop on where your customers are most likely going to be. If someone has a big budget and they want to do both, we will still always start with iOS first and do a 2 weeks ahead of the Android to make sure we kind of clear that path. So Carla, you asked, would you build an app or a website for your product? Great question. It kind of goes along with that question with Matthew. Where are your consumers going to be? And what is the value does your app or your idea have? So a great example is if your idea requires you to have push notifications. So like, for example, you know, we talked about Doug, we built an app for Doug called The Daily Shifts. One of the values that Doug has is he has to have push notifications to remind our clients to stop what they're doing in their day and to stop what they're doing and relax and talk about gratitude and things you're grateful for. You won't be able to get push notifications for a website or a web app, right? So one of the valued propositions of this app is push notifications. So we had to start with an app, right? And so it really comes down to what your idea is. If your idea can be done through a website, 1000% start there, because it's going to be significantly cheaper than having to find iOS developers and stuff like that. And so I probably get on 3 or 4 calls a week where people are like, I have this really great idea. I want to do this. And I'll always recommend, be like, you should build this in Masterclass first, or, hey, you should probably build this on a website and get people signing up and start using the basic versions of it. But it comes down to really what your business is and if there's value in it, whether you need an iOS app or not is really the decision for that. So hopefully that answers your question, Carla. So great. I think I have answered most of the questions. If there's any more questions, throw them up right now, but I'll kind of start wrapping up. again, I feel like I'm just kind of rambling on here as a one-sided person here, but again, if it comes down to it, guys, find a team that wants you to be successful as you want to be. And that's something we pride ourselves on, is we're very, very passionate about our clients' ideas. And one of the things we pride ourselves, and this is a really kind of a big thing, is we actually have really good relationships with every single client we've ever worked with, because it really comes down to is making sure that we're aligning and making sure that our alignment and our desires and our ambitions are all in line with our founders. And so as we go out and we pitch lots of ideas, and we actually get to be kind of choosy on who we want to pick as clients, one of the big things we really base it on is how big of a rock star is the person that's pitching us? Are they going to get to this next step? So I challenge you guys to be that person, right? You're in an early startup stage. Most of you are there. Make sure that you're that person that is extraordinary. I always use the phrase, extraordinary people are just normal people that do extraordinary things. So go do extraordinary things and be that rock star. I'm really excited to hear in about 6 to 8 months to a year, 2 years, to find out that a startup that was here is now just killing it. And so thank you guys for your time. Thank you for the questions. Thank you for being a part of that. If you guys want to jump on our podcast, it's called How to Build an App. You can find it on all major places. You'll see this ugly mug fairly often on that. But we have some amazing guests. If you want to learn more, everything that we've talked about today, we've talked with experts in that podcast. So go there. If you guys are ready to start this App Accelerator program, you saw we're offering a $2,000 off our App Accelerator program, which gets you multiple designs, high fidelity prototype, design maps, design workshops, empathy maps, competitive audits, development roadmaps. We actually will go through and help you be successful. So thank you guys so much for your time. Please reach out, strides.dev, if there's anything we can do. Thank you.
Hey guys, we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you found it useful, it would really help us out if you shared it with a friend.
If you could take a quick second to either text or DM someone who would also love this, it would totally make our day. Also, make sure you head over to howtobuildanapppodcast.com.
We have a bunch of free resources for you, along with show notes from this episode.
Last thing, if you're looking to build an app, we would love to talk to you. You can book your free strategy call about your app idea at howtobuildanapppodcast.com.
Thanks for listening and have an awesome day.